We've emptied out the courtroom. Come on up. 15-2994, Blasius versus Angel Automotive, Inc.
Good morning. May it please the court, Brandon Wilson appearing on behalf of James Blasius. In this case, Mr. Blasius's vehicle was completely destroyed by fire less than 24 hours after Angel Automotive made more than $20,000 worth of modifications to the vehicle, including to the area where we allege the fire originated. A jury, not the district court, should have been permitted to determine whether Angel's modifications were the cause of the vehicle fire in this case. We're asking this court to reverse the district court's grant of summary judgment in favor of Angel for three basic reasons. First, Mr. Blasius was not required to pinpoint the cause of the fire in the vehicle in order to satisfy proximate causation. Secondly, Angel was not required to have possession of the vehicle at the time of the fire in order for Mr. Blasius to rely on res ipsa loquitur. And finally, at a minimum...
Did you say on res ipsa loquitur?
I did, Your Honor. And finally, third, at a minimum, there are fact questions regarding causation, which should have, again, been determined by the jury and not the district court.
Now, isn't the idea of res ipsa loquitur that the actions speak for themselves, that a car just doesn't catch on fire in the ordinary course of operations, except the cars do, in fact, catch on fire on a fairly common basis? Most of us have seen a car catch on fire in our lifetimes, and there are many causes for car fires.
Conceivably, yes. And I think that the court is getting to one of the issues that was raised, frankly, for the first time on appeal by Angel, and that is this notion that there are literally thousands of components on a vehicle. Mr. Blasius could have been driving at excessive speeds. Something, you know, innumerable things could have happened. But what res ipsa loquitur says is that the plaintiff is permitted to identify one potential cause, regardless of whether there are, like we said, innumerable other possible causes, and then it's up to the jury to decide whether to accept the inference or not.
Now, we don't know when the negligence occurred, do we?
We don't know for certain, but we have a bevy of circumstantial evidence that tells us that an improper fluid transfer line connection was made at some point during the modifications. How do we know that? Mr. Blasius' expert has indicated that he believes the fire originated in the left rear portion of the engine compartment. He indicated that Angel Automotive performed modifications to substantially all of the vehicle, but in specific, made connections, fluid transfer line connections in the same area.
You know, Mr. Hooker seemed to have not much more than what I would view as a hesitant opinion that the fire could have been caused by something Angel did. He used words like possibility, that's my thought on this, could be. Was there any concrete evidence Hooker had of how or where it occurred? In other words, burn patterns, evidence of a disconnected or faulty fuel line, testing for fuel spillage on the undercarriage. I mean, anything like that at all?
We do have evidence, Your Honor, based upon the photographs that Mr. Hooker had the opportunity to review. We do have evidence of where he believes the fire originated. We also have the repair bill. We have the testimony from Angel indicating the specific type of work that they performed. We also know what fuels were traveling through those lines in that area of the engine compartment. What Mr. Hooker was not willing to do, admittedly, during his deposition was to say with absolute certainty that a faulty connection was the cause of the fire. And that makes sense, and it's completely reasonable.
But isn't that what res ipsa loquitur would have done?
No, Your Honor.
It's my freshman year of law school, so who can remember?
Res ipsa loquitur would allow the jury to infer negligence even if the plaintiff cannot prove proximate causation. And our first point in this case has been that we believe we did satisfy the burden for establishing proximate causation, but even if the court thinks we didn't, at a very minimum, Mr. Blasius should have been able to rely on res ipsa loquitur. And the district court, in refusing to allow us to do that, we believe made an incorrect conclusion of law by indicating that Angel was required to have possession of the vehicle at the time of the fire. The test, as this court has previously stated in Marulis versus Jumbo, is that the defendant has to have control over the injuring instrumentality at the time of the negligent act, not necessarily at the time of the harm. And if the court's looking for a perfect illustration of how res ipsa loquitur would work in this type of case, all the court needs to do is look at the Ebersol case. I understand it's a Missouri Court of Appeals case, but it's applying a basic fundamental, the court has already indicated, res ipsa loquitur is something we learned in first year of law school. So we're applying a basic principle to almost identical facts to this case.
Then why do we have to go to some small court in Missouri if it's so obvious?
I think the court's, let me try to rephrase it. Ebersol is important in this case because it provides a direct illustration of how res ipsa loquitur would work in a situation where a repair shop has removed transfer lines, improperly reconnected them, and caused the car to catch fire several days later. In that case, the court indicated that the repair shop had control of the injuring instrumentality, those connections, because it obviously was the party that put them together, and there was no evidence to indicate that they had been tampered with in the time between when the plaintiff picked up the vehicle and the time when the fire occurred.
You know, res ipsa may be an issue, but it goes back to your witness, Hooker. He seemed to not, isn't that his name?
Yes, Mr. Hooker.
He seemed to not understand the question when they're talking about, is it more probable as opposed to possible than not that their work caused the problem. And he was sort of hemming and hawing and seemed inclined to clarify the question. But then he says it's an absolute possibility that their work caused the problem. And I think that, at least from my point of view, this sort of gets into a jury question. Now, I guess you're trying to argue that initially before you get into a res ipsa loquitur.
Absolutely.
And this is really the problem I have with it, because your client was actually pretty accommodating with his emails and stuff, going back and saying, he's sort of saying about his insurance company and stuff that says that, you guys may owe it. I want to work with you. I'm amazed at how he really wants this car. And willing to put up two times with the practically a rebuilding of it, but that's his. And then I have another question, so I really want to deal with the other side, and that is, this accident or fire occurred when they were pulling a trailer, and the other test drives, they were not pulling something, and I don't see anybody raising that. It seems to me there is something that would put a lot more pressure on the whatever part of the fuel supply, whatever you call it. I don't know all the names of all those things. So maybe you can address that too. They didn't bring that up, but that seemed to be a completely different deal than the earlier driving.
Your Honor, I agree with you. There's no evidence in the record that we have that would prove one way or the other about whether the trailer had some additional effect on the car.
Well, they were designing it. They knew it was going to pull a trailer.
And that's what I was going to...
Yeah, no, I understand that. And it goes back to what they did in the shop for $20,000+.
Yes, they absolutely knew, because Mr. Blasius told Mr. Angel that this truck was intended for that purpose, to pull a trailer. And in fact, Mr. Angel knew the day that he delivered the vehicle to Mr. Blasius that Mr. Blasius was going on a trip the following day. To your first question, though, I completely agree with you, Your Honor. To the extent that Mr. Hooker's testimony can be characterized as humming and hawing, and maybe there's an inconsistency in his testimony, I don't believe we should discount the fact that at the end of the day he said that but for the improper work, this fire would not have occurred. Thank you.
I'll give you a minute for rebuttal.
Okay. Thank you.
Even though you used your time up. Okay. Hello, Mr. Williams.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court. The fact of a vehicle fire alone is not sufficient to establish negligence. We know that a fire occurred in Mr. Blasius' vehicle. And there is no evidence beyond that.
Well, there's some evidence beyond that. It's not just whether or not a car is going to catch fire. It's whether or not a car in this circumstance would catch fire in the absence of negligence. And here we have indications from their expert that, in fact, the fire was caused by a fuel leak. You have the person who actually connected the lines indicate at least which something that could be argued as an admission, saying he thinks that it's his fault, the very person who had personal knowledge of the connections. And then the person who was driving, who actually observed the fire and then actually saw fluid leaking underneath at the time of the accident. Within that set of facts, is it something that would happen spontaneously in the absence of negligence, or whether that's something for the jury to decide?
Your Honor, with all due respect, what you just expressed, in the record, we have a lot of speculation. We have speculation by pretty much everybody in the record. Speculation isn't sufficient. And I think that the most important thing for us to look at in here is Mr. Hooker's testimony, the expert's testimony. What did the expert say? Mr. Hooker very clearly said, there are some things he said clearly, and then there are things towards the end of his deposition where he's hemming and hawing. He says very clearly in response to questions on page 40 of his deposition, he says, the question is, based on your review of the documentation in this matter and the remaining parts of the vehicle, were you able to reach an expert opinion as to the cause of the fire? And he said no.
But he also said but for, didn't he? I mean, the fact that he was cross-well in the deposition is an indication that the jury needs to determine what weight to give his testimony, not whether or not we can decide it as a matter of law.
Well, Your Honor, we have here a witness who is very inconsistent in his testimony.
Exactly. And the weight to give which portions of his testimony is for a jury, not as a matter of law, that there no jury could find this person. It's not just that he was inconsistent. He would have to be inconsistent as a matter of law, right?
Your Honor,
to the point where he doesn't give enough evidence to an element.
And I believe that's correct, Your Honor. He was inconsistent as a matter of law. He was
But he did testify that the fire must have been caused by a fluid leak or a fuel leak due to a faulty line connection that originated in the left rear portion of the engine compartment. Should that be enough to let the issue of negligence go to a jury of car owners who love their cars?
No, Your Honor, I don't believe so. I don't think that's sufficient. I mean, he testified that the question was, so is it your testimony that you were able to determine a cause of the fire? And he said, no, I was not. I have no proof of that, and that's why I did not. I mean, you can't get any clearer than that. That is a very clear statement. That's on page 45 of his deposition. He very clearly, unequivocally states that he does not know what the cause of the fire is.
So if he has an inconsistent statement, that would make for a very good closing argument to a jury that he's not to be believed, right? But the portion that was just read by Judge Rovner is also accurate. That's something that he said. And that piece of evidence is not in isolation. You have the, in drawing all inferences in favor of the non-moving party, you have an admission by the person who actually connected the fuel lines, and then somebody who saw the fire as it progressed, sawing fluid leaking from the bottom of the automobile, correct? So it's not just this person in isolation. The jury would have to draw inferences from all three of those pieces of evidence.
Well, Your Honor, we have a situation here. If we had had an affidavit from Mr. Blas or from Mr. Hooker, and then we had a deposition testimony, clearly, or an affidavit after deposition testimony. Clearly, that's not permissible. What we have here is perhaps, and I wouldn't even go as far as to say it was an inconsistent statement. I don't think it was. I don't think that his second statement was strong enough to even be inconsistent. The second statement was so vague, and you know, there's a term for it from I picked up in law school in Texas called weasel language. He was using weasel language. He didn't. He wanted to support Mr. Blasius, but on the other hand, he knew he couldn't. He knew he couldn't because there wasn't any evidence there. There isn't any evidence to base his opinion on. And so, therefore, he uses this language that's ambiguous. But we look at his very clear testimony. His very clear testimony is that he doesn't know what the cause is, and there's no evidence of the cause.
What about the statement by Mr. Angel himself, that he thought it was his fault? Couldn't a person draw an inference from that, that he thought it was his fault because he's the one that connected it?
Your Honor, his statement wasn't that he thought it was his fault. He thought that it was possible. And possible is a lot different than saying it's more likely than not. And that's really where we have to be, more likely than not. And there is no evidence that more likely than not anything that Angel Automotive did caused this fire.
Well, what, if any, possible, I'm going to use that word, intervening cause between that complete do-over, 24-hour, they finished 24, kind of pressed to finish it up. They knew this guy's going to make the trip. So they may have hurried at the end, whatever, even though I know the one guy said he never makes a mistake. That's pretty absolute, even though he found out they didn't have the credentials that somebody thought they did.
And he also admitted that no one checked his work, too, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
You know, and so is there an intervening cause?
There
could possibly be, besides hooking the trailer up, which they planned to do anyway, and maybe whatever the technical language is about what fuel, pressure, et cetera, it takes to pull the trailer, that could have popped it when there was a weak link. But that's where I have a problem. And when he said, and absolutely there's a possibility, I think in a layman's terms, he's saying, what other possibility is there? And I guess I want to know that.
Well, first of all, Your Honor, Mr. Hooker isn't, I don't think we can really refer to him as a layman in this particular situation. He isn't like the typical person that's never given deposition.
Maybe he's pretty honest because he doesn't know absolutely. He wasn't there. He didn't watch how they made the connections and stuff. And frankly, he had to look at pictures and things as opposed to looking at the car before they took it apart so they could salvage it. So obviously he's maybe less, front line, but at the same time, he is an expert, and he is saying that given all these changes and complete makeover of the car, what else could have been the problem when the car actually caught fire and witnesses are watching the fuel leaking and burning?
Your Honor, well, first of all, I don't know that witnesses were capable of determining what fluid was burning.
Okay, could have been water spilling and burning.
But it wasn't water, either, no. I'm sure. But, Your Honor, actually, I don't know what was spilling. I don't know what was coming out. Something was burning, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it was the something that was the fuel source for this fire. Because the testimony from Mr. Blasius was that he's driving along, he smells the smoke, it took a while before he got the vehicle over to the side of the road. That's speculation. It's speculation as to what the fuel source was. Now, you would ask the question, what were some other possible causes of this? Some other possible causes, one really big potential cause of it was the electrical system. The electrical system was completely revamped by Rudy's in North Carolina, and they also did insulation. It's entirely possible that, and the record doesn't say this one way or the other, but it's entirely possible that Mr. Blasius turned on the radio for the first time. And there was a short in the electrical system that ignited insulation and caused this fire. And the fire spread, and perhaps the fire spread to such an extent that tubes melted and fluid spilled. It's all speculation, and that's the problem. And as far as Mr. Hooker's testimony is concerned, under Indiana law, he has to be able to say that it's more likely than not. Otherwise, it's of no consequence.
He has to say it's more likely not to prevail, but not to get past the summary judgment motion.
Well, Your Honor, I don't know how he can prevail at summary judgment by not saying, not being able to say that it's more likely than not, and then go before a jury, and we know he's going to have to say the same thing. He cannot say it's more likely than not.
The question is whether or not a jury could infer reasonably from various pieces of circumstantial evidence. And at that point, he doesn't have to disprove a competing theory. He doesn't have to win his case at summary judgment. He just has to show that there's an issue of fact that a reasonable jury could accept his version. He doesn't have to disprove yours at a summary judgment stage, right?
That's true, Your Honor, but he does have to, his expert is going to have to say it's more likely than not, otherwise the evidence is not sufficient. If his expert can't say that at summary judgment, his expert can't say that before a jury. We're going to get a directed verdict. I mean, that's where we're heading with this.
If that was the only piece of evidence, but it's not. You can't look at one piece of evidence in isolation. You've got all the facts and circumstances of the case and the other pieces of circumstantial evidence as well.
But, Your Honor, the evidence that this court has talked about doesn't point to the cause being Blasius. It doesn't necessarily do that. It can point to a lot of different things. I mean, we don't have anything. It wasn't even sufficient. The evidence wasn't even sufficient for Mr. Hooker to conclude that it was Angel Automotive's fault. Your Honor, I see that my time is up. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Okay. So, come on up. You had asked for 2 minutes.
I won't take that much, hopefully. I want to clarify one point that Mr. Williams made, and that's that Mr. Hooker did not testify, according to Mr. Williams, that it was more likely than not that Angel caused this fire. I direct your attention to Mr. Hooker's deposition transcript, and it's pages 57 to 58, but he's asked first if it's a possibility, and he says, absolutely, it's a possibility. He's then asked, is it more likely than not? And Mr. Hooker's response was, they seem very similar. I don't understand the difference. Isn't possible more likely than not? So, again, I believe there's sufficient evidence here in the record for a jury to decide this case, not the district court. Thank you.
Thank you very much to both parties. The case will be taken under advisement.